Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And of course, now that summer's over, you'll start seeing the autumn colours coming in. Still, you'll find more green here than anywhere else.
You're nervous. You're a nervous talker. Well, that's not any better, being a nervous mute.
Didn't think I'd ever come back here after my father made me renounce my title and inheritance and, well, threatened to kill me if I didn't. A person just doesn't feel welcome at that point.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jenny.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 21. I'm scared.
I know.
This show is complicated.
Oh, I thought it was because you were podcasting with me.
Well, in case you didn't know, I am not Mr. Blog for one thing. And I want to thank Mr. Blog, but before I get into that, I would like to let you know that Jenny is my beautiful and intelligent wife.
Which
is why she just said that. And I'm happy to be podcasting with you. We were supposed to have Doug with us, but he's asleep and sick in the next room and has been throwing up all day.
Yes.
So that's not going to work out.
Yeah. But this will
be fun.
We have no buffer.
Me and you. No, I'm excited. And as I mentioned, I want to thank Mr. Blog so much for hosting the show up to now, the first five episodes, doing an amazing job. And I saw all the feedback that you guys gave, you know, wishing him well and saying, oh, I'm going to miss you and all that. And I think I listened to every episode. I was a fan, and I think he's really knowledgeable about all the complexities of the story. And he was really enthusiastic about it in a way that I can't hope to match his enthusiasm. Even though I love what the show's, how it's going this year, I think it's been amazing. But, he and I are bring different things to podcasting, and you are who you are.
So is he going to guest or rotate in?
Yeah, he will. He's coming back for the finale.
Okay.
Which will be exciting. Most important, I just want to say thank you, Eric, for coming in and doing all that and doing such a great job with it. And I look forward to you coming back for the final episode this season and hopefully doing more as we go into the final two. Did you hear Game of Thrones? I think they've announced that this is season six. They'll have two more, 7 and 8.
Right.
And they're short.
Might be short. Oh,
I think both of them are. Yeah. Like, okay. I forget how many episodes, maybe 8 and 7 or something like that. We'll see if they actually stick to that. I think they, a lot of times when the shows announce they're going to be short like that, then they'll end up adding one because the writers freak out and realize they can't finish up the way they thought. Although I have to admit, it feels like it's winding up. Don't you think? It is. Right? They're giving us all these answers to these mysteries that have gone back since the first season, and
missing characters pop up.
Yeah. And also the show's has positive developments, which I figure, I don't know, it seems like Game of Thrones, that feels like it's wrapping up when things start going our heroes' ways.
People survive.
Yeah. Well, since I just started talking about it, why don't we go ahead and get into it? So it's time for our top five highlights of Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 6, Blood of My Blood. And what'd you think in general? It was, this season's been balls to the wall, and I would say this episode was not necessarily balls to the wall, was it?
Well, what do you mean? I thought it was pretty good. I mean,
I thought it was great.
The story, there were multiple storylines. Yeah. They advanced all so of the storylines,
yeah.
Right? There
all
was,
I'm
there
saying
was no
is,
kind of like, oh, look, Gilly and Samwell have a relationship, you know, dot, dot, dot. Like, there's, you know, none of those kind of like, oh, yes, by the way, you know, here's a little snapshot onto X, Y, and Z, and exactly no. the same it was.
Yeah, in advanced the past plot two was advanced. Episodes. That's not my point. My point is, the last several episodes have been like action packed, death and destruction, and this episode was a little calmer. And there were several moments where it seemed like something might happen. Like, I thought Gilly and Sam might just get killed, even though they were in the middle of this, like, cute sitcom, and they didn't. Or when the Sept, on the steps of the Sept, mm-hmm. Jamie's army, and that got diffused. What else?
Well, see, that's here. Physical action.
That's my point I'm making right now.
This was political action. Is that
there wasn't
action.
As much physical action in this no. episode, but it was great. Yeah, I agree.
But if you were an operator, you would be like salivating over the great moves done by the Sparrow. You'd be like,
oh. Yeah. And you know what? I want shows to have variance in pace too. And I want them to, I like it when things calm down a little bit and are intriguing and exciting in different ways. If it was just action all the time, then it would be kind of monotonous.
Right. And I felt the final ending to Arya's, well, I wouldn't say, the ending to Arya's current adventure was very refreshing, finally, you know, to mm-hmm. have that arc finally
take a significant
yes, go somewhere. Forward.
I know, you're right. Because I found that whole thing with the House of Black and White and the Faceless Men really intriguing for a long time until it seemed pretty samey. So I agree with you on that. Well, let's get into our top five. Why don't you go first? What's your number five?
How about for number five, the Three-Eyed Raven's usefulness? I'm trying to figure out like where the Three-Eyed Raven stands in this storyline. Like what is, mm-hmm. he's obviously supposed to be very powerful and is going to play a big part. But, you know, when you look at it, you're just thinking like, well, all you need are, you know, three dragons and you could probably take out the White Walkers and the Whites like that. So like,
yeah,
I mean, what's the point of him?
But well,
obviously there's a point. We'll find
out. Do you
out.
Mean what's the point of Bran or what's the point of the other Three-Eyed Raven?
Oh, well, he is the Three-Eyed Raven now. So yes, Bran. Comma, the Three-Eyed Raven.
Yeah. Well, that gets into my number five. Do you have more?
Shall we share
depth?
Our number yeah,
fives? Yeah. Because, well, what I wanted to do since I'm like, okay, I'm going to get back into Game of Thrones. It's very complicated. I'm going to need to do a lot of research, but I love this show so much. I'm totally game. And then in the first 2 minutes of the show, they're showing like 100 different scenes in like 3 seconds flashing, and I'm like, god damn you guys, I gotta research every single frame. But it was amazing, by the way. And the reason why I'm bringing that up in relation to what you just said is that this is all about Bran's vision mm-hmm. as the Three-Eyed Raven, and it showed so, it was so intriguing, and it was like you know, subliminal hypnosis or something. And I think that what's wrapped up in all of the meaning in that is about Bran's purpose.
Right. We'll find out. I mean, we need to have this suspense, but there's a part of me that's just like, you know, Daenerys has it. She's golden, you know, she just needs to fly over with her dragons and...
Well, let me just unpack this a little bit. So okay. That vision, in the post-episode interview on HBO Go last week, showrunner David Benioff said, quote, as soon as the Three-Eyed Raven realizes there's no time, he has to upload all this knowledge to Bran. And later, the showrunner said Bran just got a little window into his purpose. So I'm like, oh, what? How does this give us a hint to Bran's purpose? So there was a lot of recycled footage in these visions, but there was also some really cool new stuff. I'll break it up into categories. He learned about Daenerys and her dragons, that she came out of the fire with baby Drogon on her shoulder. There's a shadow of Drogon over King's Landing, which could be a future thing, you know, or maybe long past, but probably future, because I don't know if it looked the same. Then there was my favorite scenes with Aerys Targaryen, the Mad King. That was new. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've ever seen him before on the show. We've just heard about him. So that's Daenerys' father, obviously. He's on his throne. He's prepping the green wildfire, mm-hmm. which we know that he used to like to burn people with all the time. That was kind of his thing. And he planned on when Jaime was in that hot tub with Brienne and bearing his soul, he told that the king was planning on destroying King's Landing with that, but rather than get overtaken by Robert Baratheon. So that's what we're seeing. Prepare the wildfire. That stuff was also used later by Tyrion in the Battle of Blackwater when Stannis was attacking in his ships, because the Mad King had it stored everywhere. Anyway, so we see that. So Bran is learning about what happened with him and how Jaime killed him. Then we see him kill him. We see him stab him in the back, just like he told Brienne he did. I didn't realize he was just standing up from his Iron Throne. And then the hardest part for Bran, I don't know if he knew all this already, but he sees all these Starks getting killed, his mom, throat slit, Ned's head chopped off, Robb Stark killed himself, falling from the tower at Winterfell. He sees a lot of White Walker and white stuff. He sees the Night King, that's the name of the leader of the White Walkers, turning one of those Craster babies into a White Walker by poking him with his fingernail. He sees a lot of whites, those zombie-like creatures invading Hardhome and armies of whites. This is like he's learning about the threat, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they show that scene where the Night King touches his shoulder, and we learn that that created a connection between Bran and the Night King so that he's not safe in the cave anymore from him. He can find him. And immediately after that connection was made, the Night King sent whites after him. That's where we started off with this episode. So we know the Night King wants him dead. So if this is all a window into his purpose, to me, that's like, here's all the players in this game. The Night King knows who you are, Bran. He's coming after you. Benjen tells Bran, you are the Three-Eyed Raven now, and you need to learn to control your powers before the Night King comes. So my theory is, and things don't usually go on the show the way you think they will, but that his role will ultimately be a showdown with the Night King.
Well, it sounds like Bran had a binge-watching session of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And got up on everything. Smushed into, like, an hour and a half.
Well, and it interested me. He learned all about he saw the Starks being killed. That's his people. And the Targaryens and the Lannisters. And it seems like in every case, except maybe Jaime killing the Mad King, all the other cases, Tywin Lannister was behind the Red Wedding, which resulted in his mother and brother being killed, Catelyn and Robb. The Lannisters killed his father. Joffrey had him killed. Jaime killed the Mad King. So if he has to choose between the Lannisters and the Targaryens at this point, you would think he'd want to side with the Targaryens based on everything he's seen. If that choice ever comes into play. But I imagine really what it is humans versus White Walkers. I don't know. But anyways, based on everything that we've heard and seen, it seems to me like it's like the Night King is Darth Vader and he's Luke Skywalker, and they it's like I sense a disturbance in the Force. That's kind of the feeling that gave to me. What do you think?
I mean, he obviously has a purpose, and he's out there in the world, and obviously the prior Three-Eyed Raven couldn't do anything, wasn't doing anything, was just kind of parked out there in his tree, not willing to leave because it was safe and waiting for him to come, apparently. I don't know whether he saw that in a vision or not, or whether whether he was just kind of like...
I kind of wonder if Hodor, on some level, whether conscious or not, was aware that they were going to end up there because of that whole time loop thing from last week. You know, Bran was connected to Hodor in the past and also in the present, and that whole hold the door thing happened. And so he knew on some level, I'm going to need to bring Bran to the Three-Eyed Raven and then protect him from these whites by holding this door.
Probably at some level. I mean, yeah. I do believe, and I don't recall, I have to rewatch it at the end. You know, he's been saying Hodor his whole life, but I think at the very end, he finally said, hold the door.
Oh,
while his younger self was saying, degenerating from hold the door to Hodor, he went from Hodor to hold the door, I think.
And I think it would be kind of ingenious if he actually did have some conscious knowledge of what was to happen, because he couldn't say it. You know, I mean, if he did know, he couldn't say it. But I actually think that he was just sort of mentally impaired and probably didn't. It was like he had a massive stroke or something. As far as what the Three-Eyed Ravens are, I was looking that up. He's a green seer, which means he can have visions of the future, the past, and what's going on in the present in lands far away. And back in ancient times, there were a lot of green seers. I think they were children, mostly children of the forest, but some humans, and the three-eyed raven's been called the last green seer. And there's also theories that the three-eyed raven, the old three-eyed raven, is actually Bran when he gets older. So it's another time loop thing. I don't know.
You know, this goes into that timeless question of free will versus fate.
Yeah, right.
But yeah. I guess none of them have any control over their destiny because George R.R. Martin ultimately has control over all their destinies.
Yeah, and the way to cheat that, because if you see your future and it's shitty, then you might just want to move to another continent or something, right? To totally prevent it. But the way to cheat that with Hodor is he just had a huge brain spasm, so he didn't. Or maybe he actually wanted to get to where he knew he was supposed to go. I don't know. We'll never know. All right, what's your number four?
My number four is Daenerys, you know, rousing speech at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it brought to me the idea, the issue of leadership, right? You know, you see all these people. There's a lot of armies in this show, mm-hmm. and various leaders of armies and how they manage to. What's the word? Motivate them, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's like motivating her Dothraki, saying like, follow me across.
She's the best motivator on the show, I would say.
Yes, it's kind of odd because like she's like, come over with me to Westeros and we'll take over the country. And you know, I know in one hand she's like, hey, but we have to make sure the slaves are protected and women are not raped. But like, really, yeah, come on. I know. You're going to take Dothraki. All these blood
What's going to happen to them? And then you'll become gentlemen at the end and we'll train you in the ways of serving tea. No, what?
So, you know what? It's exactly what, was it Dario who said it? You know, you're a conqueror, right?
Yeah.
Not a ruler. So yeah, she's like the entrepreneur. She's a conqueror. She can conquer. Once she gets over there and like they take over and they start like raping and pillaging, she'll be like, well, you know, that wasn't kind of like, I don't really know what to do after this point.
I feel like that. Yeah. Like we've all been saying, Meereen, is it really necessary? You know, similar to maybe with Arya at the House of Black and White. It's like, okay, what's this all going to come to? With Meereen, it's like, she's bogged down in politics. We want her conquering. And I feel like in this episode, Dario says, you weren't made to sit on a chair at a palace. What was I made for? You're a conqueror, Daenerys Stormborn. So it's like, let's get moving with the plot already. And I feel like maybe this is a pivot point where she's rallying these Dothraki. I don't think she's then going to turn around and say, but I first have to go back for 7 years and make sure everything's cool in Meereen. I think it's time to go to Westeros. Then again, there's two more seasons left, so I don't know. Do you think it's time for her to, she's going to like go now, be on the move?
Oh, you gotta use that, what's it called? Momentum. I mean, she's got a lot of momentum right now. So,
and this is where she was with Drogo's guys in season one. And she lost the momentum when he died. Right. So now she has it back again. And there's no other man to depend on. So she's in a much better position now. And she has a huge ass dragon.
Yes.
So maybe they'll go now, you know? I hope so. They'll get those ships. You know what? That was another thing, though. Okay, here's what's going to hold them up. Because she said something like, who has 1,000 ships? Well, nobody. Well, not yet. So they still have to make the ships to get everyone over there.
Yes, details. has the lack of funding ever stopped?
Yeah, Tyrion, can you get on those ships? Get that ship thing going. Well, my number three was actually, or four, I'll make that my number four, was actually Daenerys too. And I thought in that speech, she looked really bloodthirsty. And right after Dario had said she's a conqueror, and earlier on in the episode, we saw a flashback of her crazy father trying to burn everything down, burn them all. So it sort of made me a little taken aback. Like she's got this, I don't know, like berserker look in her eye right now, you know, it's just a little bit foreboding. And yeah, what's she going to do once she gets there and the Dothraki have their fun conquering and fighting, and then is she going to be able to then turn that around and suddenly be benevolent and civilized and all that? I don't know if she's clearly
No, she's not thinking like that far ahead. I mean, she wants to attack this continent because it destroyed her family. Yeah. She doesn't know anybody really.
She's
from
like,
the, she's never
Arya.
Been to this.
She wants vengeance.
Right. I mean, she was born in the continent, but I mean, like, you know, she doesn't really know the people there.
No.
You know, she just wants to go in.
The
and
Targaryens
have revenge.
Are gone, right? Yeah.
Right. So it's like she has an enemy that she doesn't really know. She just knows from stories, and so she decides she wants to attack them out of vengeance. I mean. Vengeance,
and what she feels is her birthright, too.
All right. Is that enough of a motivation to last you beyond, like, the first 5 years?
Yeah, well, I think Dario's point here is she's not really happy unless she's conquering. So what do you do with that? You're just like, okay, let's not think about it. Let's just go conquer, and then we'll worry about what happens next after that.
Because it feels
well,
good.
You'll do what the Roman Empire did and just keep on expanding until you get corrupt and fat and you die away. That's what happens. Just while we're on Daenerys, they were leading the Dothraki people. Where were they going? I can't remember. But anyway, all of a sudden she just kind of stopped and she didn't sniff the air, but that'd be pretty funny. And she's like, hold on a second. So I feel like she just sensed the dragon.
Drogon was there. Yeah.
And so she went off and got him. And then the speech is a reference to how the Dothraki have these blood riders they pledge their life and service to their Khal, and the Khal usually has three, I think she said. But she says all of these guys are her blood riders now, and they pledge their life and their service. And when the Khal and the blood riders address each other, they say, blood of my blood, which is the title of this episode. So that's how it fits in. That speech also mirrored a speech given by Khal Drogo in season one to his people, which I read somewhere. And Blood of My Blood is also a good episode title because between the Dothraki and their blood riders, I don't think they actually are blood related. And that's sort of how Sam feels towards his son, who's not his blood relation, but he probably still considers it Blood of My Blood. And then I also thought it was like a reflection of the literal relationship between Sam and his father, because they are blood, but they don't have that relationship at all. It's the opposite, you know? So it's about bonds that are deeper than blood. Bonds for a common purpose. When you have a common purpose, you can be really bonded together. And Sam and his dad don't have anything in common.
No, I do think blood is very strong in this world, right? I mean, like,
it can be, yeah.
Definitely the Lannisters are very much like us against the world, baby.
Yeah.
You know,
but they also are united in purpose except for Tyrion.
Well,
and he's
Tyrion,
the outsider,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So. The black sheep of the family.
and there are also theories that he is not actually a Lannister too. People think he's a Targaryen too. I forget what the lineage is on that, but I'd have to look that up.
That's too soap opera.
Well, they say that might be one reason why he was able to do okay with the dragons when he went to check and see how they were doing.
Well, they didn't try to burn him.
Yeah, but. Exactly. All right, your turn.
All right.
Number three, right?
Number three. So I was thinking of like the Northern House alliances out there. You know, I got pretty confused by the end of this episode that I had to go online and kind of look it all up. Mm-hmm. So this is how it seems to shake out. We got with the Boltons, we've got the Karstarks and the Umbers. And Karstarks are the family who's, I think, one of the sons was killed by Jaime Lannister mm-hmm. when he tried to escape. And so, you know, they wanted his head, and I think for whatever reason, there's a reason, but Rob was forced to kill the father.
Oh, yeah. He cut his head off. On the battlefield.
Or because he had broken a rule of the Northern houses.
I can't remember. Someone will tell us,
so,
I'm sure.
So the very last surviving son is the one who's just like, of course I'm with you, Boltons. You know, I hate the Starks.
So there was, that's the Umbers? Or no,
that's the Karstarks.
Karstarks, okay.
The Umbers are the is the house that's the most furthest north, mm-hmm. and that's where they had sent Rickon and Osha, and then he came back and turned them over. The son of the house came mm-hmm. back and turned them over.
And some people think that's a fake out, and that wasn't really Shaggy Dog's head, but I think it's straightforward.
Osha's dead, so I think it wasn't a very good fake
that's
out.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point.
So the, and apparently they are joining the Boltons because they're pissed at Jon Snow for, you know, letting the wildlings
through. In,
yeah. And they're the last first attacked.
And this is only tangentially related, but I noticed that Sam's mother mentioned that she knew the Lord Umber, who, what did she say about him?
He taught his daughters to hunt.
Yeah. So she mentioned that.
Shocking.
Because they're crazy savages up there.
They must show off their ankles.
No, it's too cold.
So, and then, okay, so that's what's going on in the north. I think they briefly mentioned the Manderleys, but I don't know anything about the Manderleys. And then over in River Run, which used to be controlled by Walder Frey, has been taken back by the Tully uncle, Blackfish. And apparently he has two more houses on his side, Malister and Blackwood. Mm-hmm. All right. And then so we have Frey, who should have the support of the Lannisters and the people in King's Landing. And he does, because Jaime's showing up. Mm-hmm. We've got the remnants of the Starks, Jon Snow and Sansa, which are now kind of allied, which are allied with the Wildlings. And do they have anyone else besides the Wildlings at this point?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I think
they're hoping for the Karstarks.
They're hoping for like the et cetera houses of North that probably have not been named.
They said if they can get all of them together, then it would match.
And so, you know what gets me is when Sansa keeps saying, like, you know, everybody loves the Starks. You know, there's great loyalty towards the Starks. Yeah. And I'm looking like, really?
Where?
I'm not seeing this in any of the storyline. Like when Robb Stark was trying to like unite the North, right, against King's Landing, right? There was a lot of questioning. They're just like, hey, kid, who are you?
Yeah,
you
know?
I mean, I'm not seeing this united Northern front. I'm just seeing, you know, they a typical bickering, you know, area of this country where everybody is kind of looking out for their own thing, trying to play, you know, who's the most powerful, right? Oh, let's join
what
them.
What about the Vale, the with Peter Baelish? You never know whose side he's really on, but he's telling Cersei that he wants to take back Winterfell, but then be allied with her.
He's telling Cersei that?
Yeah, wanted to take the... He said that last season.
Cersei
that he wanted to Cersei.
Oh, okay.
That he wanted to take Winterfell and be the Warden of the North and have her support that.
Right. So you know, that's what's going on in the Vale. Then we have the Greyjoys, who are, you know, having a little civil war right now. So there's a lot of confusion going up in the northern.
Yeah, just typical turmoil and stuff. Right. I mean, it's interesting to me that the first book in the series is called Game of Thrones, and that's really the War of the Five Kings. But the whole series is called Song of Ice and Fire, which sort of denotes the White Walkers versus the dragons or Daenerys, right. But they're still, I guess they were smart to call the series Game of Thrones because it still is about power grabs and, you know, always fighting and skirmishing and stuff.
And seeing how Sansa is reacting, right? She's so angry against the Boltons. You know, she really wants to attack. She wants to bring up all of the might of the North against them, which is interesting. And the same thing with Daenerys. Like, she wants to get her birthright back, and she wants to bring the might of the East against the West. And yet, you know, it's kind of odd because to me, that seems like such an odd motivation in this world. This world seems to be all about ambition or survival. Like, people want power. Most seems like to stay alive at a certain point. And then, you know, to see Sansa, you know, just want to have revenge. And I don't know.
Well, there's a strong, it's like in the Middle East with Jerusalem. There's people have such a strong sense of history and ownership over the same places. And they feel like they have a claim, you know, and it goes deep into their bones.
Well, I mean, I can see them. Okay. Sorry. I can see them having the motivation. I find it hard to believe they can convince other people to follow them in their motivation. Like, what do all of these houses of North care about, like, supporting this really pissed off Stark daughter?
Well, it's all about alliances. Yeah, that's why they're talking about they need to convince them. Why should I support you? And I think ultimately it is about survival, and the way to convince any house to support you is to convince them that you're going to be on the winning side. You know, that's really the most important thing, because otherwise to support somebody on the losing side, you're doomed. So right. Yeah, there would have to be some other motivation there. Which there are sometimes, like religious fervor can be a good motivation to rally people, even though they think they might die or be on the losing side. Okay. We see a little bit of that here, which kind of leads me into my point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're number three?
Yeah. So it's all about the crown and the faith with the High Sparrow and Marjorie and Tommen. And when Tommen first meets with Marjorie, last we saw she was saying, we got to resist this with all our might, right? And she comes out with stars in her eyes this episode, but I thought she was still resisting. And when she said the High Sparrow wasn't all he seemed, I thought she goes, he's not all he seemed, is she? I thought she was testing Tommen to see if Tommen knew what a creep he is. And Tommen was like kind of confused. And it turned out that actually, at least if we can believe what's on the surface, she's been totally converted. And the interesting thing about that is it seems like a huge... oh crap, you know, oh, she's been indoctrinated into the cults. I think that's the intention that we're supposed to feel, because when the whole alliance is announced, there's this music like da 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 da, this is horrible. But she's, when she's talking about, you know, the things I was saying, it was just lies, and I wasn't really I didn't care about the poor, I just wanted to look good, basically, I'm thinking, well, that's good. It feels like she went through a self-improvement course and got a lot out of it. You know, I mean, I liked my point is that I liked the things that she was saying for her own personal spiritual growth. But on the other hand, I don't like, I really feel like this, the High Sparrow, just they're his puppets. And now he's supreme leader, not technically, but effectively.
He's their Rasputin. Except for the fact that I really don't think Marjorie is like truly converted. I mean,
you don't, huh?
No, I think she's
playing.
Well, she's trying to survive. Right. I mean, it's not fun being in a dungeon.
No. I mean, yeah, she could just be like, here's the best way to get the hell out of here and still have some influence.
Right.
You think so?
Well, I mean, just to get the hell out of there would be a vast improvement already. She might be in a second prison now, but at least it's not quite as tortuous.
Yeah, but
that she'll have to now try to figure out another way out of.
She realizes that the High Sparrow is so cunning and resourceful that maybe this was the best thing she could do to have any influence by allying herself with him, right? So it's better than just getting out, because let's say she could have found some solution where she gets out and gets sent to Dorne to be a housemaid or something, you know, that would suck. But now at least she has some chance at having some influence. But the way she played it, I believed it.
Really?
Yeah. I believed that she'd been converted.
Oh, I just thought like, oh, she's
you're like,
good.
You fool.
I'm like, she's you can be good. There's nothing like admitting to your faults that you were fully aware of from the very beginning. Yeah.
She made a good case, because I think it was even a quote in the show, like as she said it, that it's hard to admit your fault. So that those aren't the exact words, but hard to see the truth about yourself. And I do think that a lot of people, you don't want to admit the truth about yourself because it destroys your illusions, right? So if she's able to admit the truth about herself without destroying those illusions, without, you know, oh, I was so petty and remain petty, that's impressive. You know what I mean? And still feel righteous in it. But I'm not saying you're wrong. In fact, I'm sort of 50-50 on this. I lean towards believing her, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if...
I'm just, you know, she comes well-trained with her grandmother, is it?
Yeah, Olena.
I mean, they're a woman in a man's world, right? So they know they have to play the long game. Yeah. Sometimes the very, very long game.
And put on the right face.
I mean, one of my favorite... I'm not sure.
There's one thing we know about her. She knows how to deceive people and put on a happy face.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think of like the politics in this, I think a lot of Roman history, right? And I remember reading, watching I, Claudius by Robert Graves, which is about various Roman emperors. Mm-hmm. And there was just one empress, Olivia, and she just played the very, very long game. I mean, like from like from getting married at 18 until like her son came of age, she played the very long game.
She worked it.
Mm-hmm. So who knows? Who knows what Marjorie is thinking? That's what's great about mm-hmm. the fact that no one can read your mind. I mean, I guess Bran can, but that no one can read
your
mind.
What about Tommen? Is he faking it too?
I think he's not strong enough to trust with her long game. So she's just going to have to use him as a pawn.
Is he faking it or has he really converted?
No, I don't think he's good enough at faking it. So she can't trust him with that.
That was kind of a rhetorical question, I guess. Yeah. But I don't know if he, you know what? I don't really think he's feeling the presence of God. I think he's more like, all right, I am going to do what Marjorie says because she's hot. You know, but on the other hand, he has that conviction of faith. He in some ways is stronger than he was before. Like the old Tommen would not have been able to banish fire Jaime from the Kingsguard, and he's like feels like he has God on his side now, so he can do that definitively. He's at least making some decisions and sticking to them. I'm not saying I support what he's doing, but it's just interesting to see how when you get religion that suddenly you can make these pronouncements like that, you know, and be firm in them,
even though he's doing it with his little teenagery voice.
So I guess that goes into my number two, which I'm gonna title Religion versus Magic. Which I think is very interesting.
Sure, that's not an equal sign. Oh,
well, there's a lot of gods, right? So there's the drowned god, there's the Lord of Light, there's the many-faced god, there's the old gods, right? They all have their followers, they all have their practitioners, they all seem to have quite some power, right? I mean, are these gods fighting each other? Are these gods just kind of like floating through the world and letting their powers being used? Or are there really no gods, but it's a world filled with magic, just like a world filled with science, and, you know, mm-hmm. they just know how to like manipulate what's necessary to get the magic to happen.
Are you questioning the existence of gods?
Yes.
Shame on you.
Possibly. I'm questioning, yes.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
Because these,
I don't know. I mean, we know there's something because we've seen what Melisandre can do for one thing. Mm-hmm. And her focus is the Lord of Light. And also the faceless men, they seem magical sometimes. But yeah, that doesn't mean they're necessarily is any god out there. What do you think?
I mean, when I think of like a place, a world that might have multiple gods, you know, there's either like the Greek and Roman version in which they actually interact with each other. And the reason why things don't always go the way you planned if you support one god is because the other god like managed to block the guy or,
yeah.
you know.
And there's different, like within this universe, it feels like different sets of gods, like you're suggesting, the old gods and the new gods. And so I don't know. I bet if we did some research, we could find out. But is there a mythology within this universe where these gods meet up? I kind of doubt it. I think that they're kind of discreet. Like the new gods were supposed to replace the old gods, even though some people still believe in the old gods. You know what I mean? But I don't really know. Yeah. But I would say that because it's a universe of magic and it's fiction, that the intention of George R.R. Martin is that there are gods. I would guess that.
You don't think certain human practitioners are using their skills in magic to create gods and to manipulate people?
I guess it could be, yeah. I mean, this story is so freaking complex that and any one little bit of it could be unpacked into its own series. And it might be fun to see a series where we get to see these gods, you know, fighting with each other. I've never seen that on TV before.
It would be interesting to see a god.
I used to love the Greek
gods. You know
what?
I want to see one of the gods.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm just seeing all of...
I want to see any god, please.
All I'm seeing are their practitioners who are all very creepy.
Yeah, I guess you're right. The many-faced god practitioners are... They're creepy, but they're... I don't know. I feel like they're the coolest for some reason. I don't know. All right, my turn. What am I on? Two. My number two. Is The Journey the Reward? We've kind of talked about this a little bit already, but watching recent developments, I'm wondering, are we expecting everyone, Jon, Arya, Sam, Daenerys, Tyrion, to play a big part in the resolution of whatever this whole thing is? Has everything we've been seeing been leading to something, or is some of it just well, this is a really interesting situation, so let's have fun watching it, you know? For example, Arya, I never bought the idea that she could accomplish her goals of vengeance with her list of people she wants to kill by learning from the Faceless Ones how to be an assassin, because it's within their doctrine that you need to give up your identity. And a huge part of her identity, which I feel is personified by her sword, the needle, is the need for vengeance. And so if she's going to give that up, then that is also giving up her goal. But on the other hand, so then I'm like, well, was that whole just a waste of time? As I mean, it was entertaining as hell, but it was a waste. Well, I guess she learned some assassin skills, right? So, and we'll see. I mean, it might have other impacts, but in some ways I'm wondering, like, what is her role? It's just the unknown. It's like, what is her role going to be? And what was the point of this?
it'll all come clear, like Hodor.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. If we get a bunch of Hodors by the end of this, that'll be freaking amazing. Daenerys in Meereen. I mean, she needed to learn how to be a better leader. So maybe that helped her do that.
Well, but you know, otherwise, one of the marks of a good leader is the ability to delegate to the right people.
But I'm, you know, my point is, like, why did we watch that? Why, as far as the larger story and her place in the resolution of this, what did Meereen, we won't know until the end, but it's just what I'm questioning. I mean, it let her bide her time for a little while her dragons grew bigger, mm-hmm. to where they could do some damage. It taught her to be a better leader. Provided a way for her to meet up with Tyrion, which could have some ramifications down the line. So
what does it mean? It means that when she finally has conquered the whole world and she's on the very top, she'd just be like, you know, I really hate this part of it, so I'm just gonna like go off and do something else. I've been wanting to, like, you know,
yeah, it's hotter that she doesn't.
Train some horses.
That's a good point. Yeah, that could be it too. And Sam, like, I know some, I heard at least one person, Rem, actually say he's not interested in the whole Sam story. I love it. I think it's really refreshing because it's something different. If this series was filled with Sams, then that would be ridiculous, but it's fun to have a Sam in it. But I'm seriously going, is he really going to play some huge part? I mean, he already killed a White Walker and a Thin, so we know he's capable of doing some stuff, but I'm just so curious, like, did George R.R. Martin just start down these storylines that he thought were interesting without really knowing how they were going to tie together?
I don't think so. I think they're going to tie together.
You think they're all going to, yeah.
Sam is going to be sitting in a inn when Bran comes by, and they're going to, like, you know, start talking over a drink and be like, hey, you know,
yeah, I think
I read some books about, like, how to destroy White Walker.
For the series, I mean, I don't care what happens. I've already enjoyed it so much that I don't think, it's not like Lost where I felt like they really need to stick the landing or this series is going to go down a few notches, which it did end up doing for me. For Game of Thrones, I feel that way, but not to as great of an extent, just because it's been so entertaining to watch. And but if they are going to stick the landing, I think the way to do it is to have a bunch of Hodor-like moments where things just come together, you know, and where we see, oh, that's where that was all going. And that's why they did this and that and this.
I have faith.
I do too. But I also don't totally care. Like, I'm sure even if not every storyline has that kind of meaning, that enough will, mm-hmm. to make it awesome. So, yeah.
So my number one has to do with the Arya storyline, which, mm-hmm. was, you know, it was just refreshing to have that arc kind of come to an end, or at least, you know, move on. Because I've always had a problem with the Faceless Men cult. I mean, like, watching a little bit of that story week after week, this God of Many Faces, and it was just so hard for me to wrap my brain around this cult. Okay, here's this death cult. This cult of amazing assassins who can shape change and face shift, and here they are assassinating people for $4.99. I mean, like, oh yeah, you want to kill your coworker? We'll do it. And like, yeah. These great powers, this like monastic existence, this huge temple, self-abnegation, right. Destruction of your identity. It's so that you can, you know,
kill for money.
kill for, like, and not much. Like, how much money could a second-rate actress, well, like, that's possibly what I was wondering, scrape
because
up?
I think we've learned in past issues in that it costs so much money to hire them that even, like, Tywin couldn't afford it sometimes. So I don't, at least that's what I thought I remembered. So that confused me. Like, why would this actress, was Arya being genuine when she said this girl wants to kill you? Was that really the one who hired her?
I think it was that lady. Yeah, I think so it was too. The actress. And I think so then they
maybe
say
the
this
price is different depending on
right
other
and
factors.
And I've read that it might be the price is kind of like what you can pay.
Right. It's on a sliding scale.
It's on a sliding scale. But I'm just like, okay, so we have a town, Braavos, that happens to have this death cult assassin, you know.
Right.
What did the murder rate be like really it's bad? Like, it's like, oh, sliding scale assassination services.
What town are they in?
Braavos.
I don't know if I want to live in Braavos. right next to the death cult. But then they go pretty far and wide too. We've seen Jock and Hagar across the narrow sea and everything.
So that's why I find this cult just a little bit like hard to wrap my brain around. Like, you know, anyways. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of glad that storyline is over. Hope Arya picked up some skills. Hope she survives the waif and we'll move on.
I know.
And I'm glad because, I mean, she is driven by vengeance, but one of the reasons why she dropped out of the cult was finally she was just like, well, you know, I just cannot get behind their precepts, which is kill anybody who pays us, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if it's like, for a good person, for an annoying person.
An annoying person paying you to kill a good person. Yeah.
So in the end, that kind of like, you know, brought her out of the cult.
I know. I mean, I think there's a few factors that came together to shake her out of it. Because the whole thing with the Faceless Men is that you need to give up who you are and just be a girl, right? And not be Arya. That's what she needed to do. And seeing that play, showing her father get his head chopped off, for what, that was the main thing. It just brought back a reminder of what she'd been through and why she wants vengeance and who she is, right? And I think maybe that was part of a test from Jock and Hagar. Let's put her in this place that will totally remind her of her former identity and see how she handles that. But not only that, also she's a compassionate person at heart. And so seeing this good woman, the only good person in this whole company of actors, it seemed like they were all petty and stupid, and admiring her. And then, you know, her task is to kill her. That was another thing that reminded her, I'm compassionate. And then when she was talking to that woman and giving her the other idea of how to play that part, she said, how to play Cersei. She said, well, the queen loves her son. She wouldn't just cry. She would be angry. She'd want to kill the person who did this to her. Well, that's Arya's MO, revenge seeking, right?
Mm-hmm.
People did bad stuff to me. I want to go around and kill them. But she's not just projecting. That's also what Cersei felt when Joffrey got killed. So that makes me realize that Arya and Cersei have something in common. But the point is that also reminded her. I mean, she really was in her head when she was telling the act. She was really thinking about it. Like, I want to kill the people that did bad things to me, you know? So that was another reminder of what her purpose was.
Right.
So all those things together.
I do not want to kill this actress. Yeah. There's other people I'd rather be killing.
Yeah, and she wants to hold on to that vengeance. And what I think where she really made the decision was when the actress was about to drink the poison and she knocked it out of her hand. She knew in that moment, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to get my sword. And just the fact that she kept that sword hidden this whole time was like having one foot out the door a little bit, because that's part of her identity as Arya and her need for vengeance. And so I love the way all of that came together. And I feel like it was a pretty hard test, but that's, if you're going to give up your identity, you need a test like this where it's put right in front of your face and you're able to turn away with it and from it. And she wasn't able to. And then I'm really scared for her, though, because they're so skilled. Like, what is she going to do? She was in that little hovel, and she turned out the lights. And I'm like, that waif is going to come in and kill you.
Well, I find it interesting that Jack and Hagar was like, all right, waif, yeah, you can go do it. I mean, like, is he going to send you know, if it doesn't work successively more stronger people to take her down, is he going to go after her himself?
Mm-hmm. Or, he said to not let her suffer too, which showed, I guess, some compassion on his part. Right.
He also didn't seem very surprised at what happened.
Right. He's all, okay. But he also said there's going to need to be another face on the wall. Maybe it's going to be the waifs.
We don't know. I read somewhere that they had been hired to go after Daenerys and they failed. And I'm not sure whether they're still trying to go after her or whether they're kind of like, oh, well, sometimes we just can't deliver or playing the long game or...
I didn't know that. I didn't remember that. They'd been hired to go after Daenerys. Huh. Yeah. Maybe they... Yeah, so much money gets you so much effort. I don't know.
Or maybe they were trying to hire them to go after Daenerys and the price was too high.
I think that might have been what it was. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be it. Okay. Well...
Oh, and I just wanted to bring up, I know this is not part of my top five, it kind of addresses one of yours.
There's much in this episode. I'm gonna have to do a top seven.
Okay. Benjen's dramatic rescue.
We gotta talk about Benjen in general,
because I mean that matches Brienne's dramatic rescue. And you know how you're saying, like, is this gonna all wrap up, or are people's fates going to have any meaning? I think the fact that there are more and more of these dramatic, I wouldn't say rescues, but like people meeting each other,
Sansa and Jon Snow meeting
I mean, like, you know, I can't even find somebody in the parking lot, and then suddenly these two plot lines like converge perfectly. So I really do think everything will
you found me in the parking lot eventually.
Well, we had cell phones.
10 minutes. Yeah, that's true. Well, Benjen Stark, that was a pretty important reveal. We haven't seen him since season one, when he came to Winterfell to help welcome Robert Baratheon and company. And then he invited Jon Snow up to become a part of the Night's Watch. And then he took Jon Snow up there, and then he went on a ranging mission, and his horse came back without him, and they found his men dead. And we didn't know what happened until now. And apparently White Walker stabbed him, and he was going to turn into a white, but the Children of the Forest saved him by plunging dragon glass into his heart, which seems to be their solution for different things. And his face looks pale and scarred, right? It looked...
Right. So he was like halfway to white, right?
He's half white, like our son, Nico. So... I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, it kind of mirrored what happened with Brienne saving Sansa recently, but I still enjoyed it. And I know that this is one reason why it's a shame that Mr. Blog left. I feel like he left one episode too early, because he's been hoping that this character from the book called Cold Hands, who's this mysterious character that wears a cloak, just like Benjen, right? And helped people up beyond the wall. And in the books, they still don't know who it is. But at the end of this episode, they had that making a featurette, and they called Benjen Cold Hands. So at least in this story, he's Cold Hands. We don't know if he is in the books or not. There's reason to believe maybe not. But in the book, it was a big mystery or it still is, but in this, they didn't bother making it a mystery for very long.
Well, they didn't 5 minutes. Mention Cold. I mean, I never heard of Cold Hands until now. So
yeah. So anyway, that's pretty cool with his flaming fireball chain thing.
Yeah, he's a fire spinner,
batting off the zombies. Yeah. What about? Okay, so I want to talk about the Night King a little bit. He's the leader of the White Walkers, and last week the man that we saw, Leaf, who's this child of the forest, turn into the first White Walker by putting dragon glass into his chest. That was the Night King. He was one of the first men, they're called, who the Children of the Forest created the White Walkers to fight in the first place. We learned recently they came 12,000 years ago when the Children of the Forest and the Giants were the inhabitants of Westeros, and they started chopping down sacred trees, so the Children of the Forest wanted them out. And they fought. And then they introduced the White Walkers. And I don't know what happened, but I guess the White Walkers went away for a while. And we don't really know. But then they came back 8,000 years ago, and maybe the first men had forgotten by that point who created them. But anyways, the children of the forest were last seen around 6,000 years ago when the Andals invaded. And then since then, they've been considered extinct or mythical by most people. So just a little bit of history. I like to bring in some history in case people have forgotten. I wonder how many listeners are like, I know all that. How many are like, I don't care. But yeah, I feel like the Night King is like Darth Vader, or he's like Sauron, you know, he in Lord of the Rings with the eye.
Yeah,
and he has spotted Bran now.
What is his goal? Okay, he's a White Walker. He's got his White Walker brothers. He's got a ton of them.
Right.
He's got an army of whites. I mean, like...
Well, they were bred to kill men.
Oh, okay. So he's a program gone out of control.
I don't know, but
someone needs to push END on him.
They've had some development, obviously, right? Because the children of the forest looked like the way they get dressed is they roll around in some dirt and vines.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe their mossiness just grows right out of their skin or something. They're not very technically inclined, it doesn't seem like, including clothes making. But the White Walkers have some pretty fancy duds. So where did that come from? Maybe they've developed into a civilized society.
Yeah, they used to be men.
Maybe they're complicated. Oh, yeah, they used to be men, yeah. Anyway, I find them really, really interesting. I also think we should talk about Sam and Gilly some, since they were a big part of this episode. Ready, talk.
Sam,
what do you think of that part?
Still wish Sam would stand up against his dad. Sheesh.
Yeah, his dad, that actor, is really good at playing a dickhead, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, aren't you already too fat? I thought it was cute the way their little repartee back and forth. You're nervous. You're a nervous talker. Well, that's not any better being a nervous mute. Just cute, funny, you know, a little bit moment of lightness. And the whole hunting thing. We hunted squirrels. So I like that.
Well, I mean, if Samwell had the presence of mind to realize this was not going to go well, no matter what, then he wouldn't have a Valyrian sword.
That's right. Yeah. To kill some White Walkers with.
So
Heartsbane.
So there was a purpose to going home.
Were you surprised at how rich he was?
Uncomfortable.
All the servants and the quarters and everything.
Oh, it's a house.
I probably should have known that, but it just, the level of luxury shocked me a little bit.
Yes, that's true. I mean, there's really no discussion of class warfare. Mm-hmm. Well, except for in the Faceless Men. I mean, I think the reason why the Waif hates Arya so much is because
she's
of
a
class
rich
warfare.
Girl.
Yeah, she's like, we've never had noble people, you know, in the
cult. That girl is not zen at all. She's a little psycho. The Waif.
Oh yeah, she has not
a
lost
sadist.
She has not lost her her deeply held prejudices.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how the little baby actor really seemed to love Sam's mother. Did you notice that? He had a big smile on his face because she was like, had this big, little baby. And he was smiling and looking and reaching for her and everything. It was super cute. Oh, and I thought it was funny when Sam's sister said to Gilly after the whole hunting thing and that her father taught her how to hunt. She says, I think our father could learn a thing or two from your father. And I'm like, maybe not. What else? All right. I do have a few notes. They're pretty brief. I thought the whites, the zombies, they sound like the clickers in one of my favorite zombie game, Last of Us. You guys who play that game would know that. I thought when one of the actors who was really mad after they came in from their performance said, that crowd was shit. I wondered if that was a comment on fans like the showrunners acting out after all the criticism of Game of Thrones last year. What else? Oh, Cersei says she'll have a trial by combat and she's not worried because she has the mountain.
Right.
And I'm like, those things don't always go the way you think they're going to go.
Oh, you know, one thing that seemed a little optimistic was this relationship between Cersei and Jaime. I mean, like, come on, they've been together for like 20 years and they're still like that passionate. Really?
Oh. You don't believe it.
Or maybe there's maybe there's something about the incest and the like us against the world thing that keeps it alive.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing that. How long have we been together? 12 years?
Huh?
2004. 12
years. Have we had three kids?
No. I'm just saying that we're still, I'd say, twice as passionate as they are. Anything else?
No.
I think we covered it pretty good. Yeah. Wow, we're like an hour in. Holy shit.
Okay.
All right, cool. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
I sit at my table and wage war on myself. It seems like it's all for nothing. I know the barricades and I know the mortar. Recognize the weapons, use them well. This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
All right, we're back, and it's time for a little bit of news. So there's a docuseries called The Game Revealed. This is from watchersonthewall.com. The third part is out. It's available online. Each chapter covers two episodes of a piece of the Game of Thrones Season 6 with insights from the cast and crew and behind-the-scenes footage from the show. The latest edition focuses on scenes from, including Bran's vision, which is so cool to unpack. I read an article by Joanna Robinson on Vanity Fair, by the way, to get a lot of information on that. So thank you to her. She does the Cast of Kings podcast. It's also about this docuseries, The Cave Attack, The Door, The Bravosi Theater, everything in the episode. One thing I thought was interesting, director Jack Bender weighed in on Daenerys and Drogon's sky-high moment from the end, explaining his choices on how to present that scene. He said, at the end of the scene, you should be somewhat roused by her and a little horrified, which I thought was how I felt. And then he also said, she's not Hitler at Nuremberg, but she's got the power. This is an interesting choice of words. Next, viewership numbers stay at the top of the game with episode 605, last week's episode, The Door. 7.89 million people saw the first run of that episode, just slightly topping last week. And the first five episodes last year were seen by 6.98 million people on average during initial airing. This year, the average is 7.64. That's amazing for HBO, mm-hmm. a pay channel. This show is doing so much for them.
And that's not including any illegal downloads, right?
No, it's not. And it's also not including delayed watching, which brought it last week's up to over 10 million views. That's a lot higher than AMC's getting for Fear the Walking Dead on basic cable. So that's pretty damn good. And finally, George R. R. Martin told Game of Thrones showrunners his plans for Hodor's fate and the origin of his name. So they knew, they followed what he said, I think. They incorporated it into the show, as we saw last week. But Martin, appearing at an event for author Joe Hill Monday night, reportedly told fans during a Q&A that that reveal will play out differently on the page. He said that the name reveal will differ in context and how it happens. This is what a Redditor says who was supposedly at this event. So while the name will still mean the same thing, hold the door, it will be very different from the show's reveal. So I think it's cool that I hope he's still working closely with them. I don't want there to be some kind of a falling out and them to just make up the rest without his input.
No, you know? I think he just recognizes, because he's a good writer, not to be too much of a fangirl here, knowing that what happens on the screen can sometimes have to be different on the page for it to have emotional impact.
Well, I also think that now, because he really wanted to get the books done before the show caught up, but he just couldn't because of his pace. But I think now he probably wants there to be some surprises left for people who, so they'll read the book even though they've seen the show.
Right.
You know, that too. All right, that's it for the news. And, oh, what do I hear? nothing. I was trying to copy Mr. Vlogs. Thing with the ravens. I hear ravens, and that means it's time for Ravens Calls, otherwise known as listener feedback. You want to go first?
Erica N. Furter says, amazing episode. I love how they finally brought back Uncle Benjen, and it seems he is taking on part of Cold Hands. I had to rewatch Bran's visions so many times. Mad King Ares. Also, so proud of Arya. I hope she stabs the stupid waif in her smug bitch face with needle. Sam and Gilly have balls. And I am so over King's Landing. I am hoping that this is all Margaery's plan. And last but certainly not least, Dany and Drogon. Epic.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it all. And most people were in love with this episode. There were a couple that didn't like it so much, but overwhelmingly happy. Like us, like we were. Rin Drogmuller says, I'm starting to think we won't get a Winterfell battle this season, but we'll get River Run. Knew it was Benjen the moment I saw his eyes. And a couple other people said that too. They knew right away.
Well, I mean, when he showed up, my first thought was like, well, what character is still wandering around up north that this could be? Well, there's really only one.
Yeah, I forgot all about him.
Well, I mean, you don't remember John running when he was killed. It was because he was running out because someone told him Benjen had come, had showed up at the door.
I know. And that was Ollie.
Right.
And so that was totally bullshit, but it turned out to be true, which is pretty, pretty cool.
But I thought that was clever because then it kind of brings Benjen back into your brain. Otherwise, people would just be like, wait, who? Wait,
yes, what? You're absolutely right. And sometimes they do that little teasers to something in a way that's clumsy. I've noticed in the last, especially last season, I felt like they were telegraphing things a little bit too much. But when they do it the way you just pointed out, where I don't even notice that they're doing it, then I think that's what works the best. Because, yeah, that was a little subtle for me anyway. I'm not as smart as you are, but for me, I didn't catch that was a reason why they did that. So, bravo.
Kristen Hollberg says, holy hell, there's a lot going on. So much. It's getting difficult to keep track of it all. Is it me, or are we just plate spinners waiting for everything to crash down?
Yep.
I'm hoping that Needle is in preparation for the waif. Arya is smart enough to know that this last act of rebellion is going to get her killed, so I'm hoping what she's doing is preparing for it, and then after she kills the waif, she gets the fuck out of Dodge. Tommen, what a guy will do for some ass. What is their end game? Is this really happening? King's Landing doesn't seem long for this world with the first world problem idiocy over there. I'm intrigued. Smart for Sam to grab the Valyrian steel for the, quote, imaginary, end quote, White Walkers. Welcome back, Jason.
Thank you. My favorite was, what Tom and what a guy will do for some ass, because, like, yeah, that probably has a lot to do with it. He's so smitten by her. And when he first saw her, I thought she might come over and slap him, you know? Why didn't you get me out of here? But she's just really happy to see him, and
And she's trained well.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. She's either feeling the magnanimosity of someone who has just converted to religion, or she's being her normal self and playing the game. Sandy Parsons says, I like how each show has parallel versions of family dynamics. This one was all about sons who haven't done what their parents expected. Tommen, Sam, and Drogon.
Marcy Brinker, I thought this was another great episode. I was so happy that Arya decided not to follow through with her mission. She has gone down dark paths before, but after all she had been through, her need for vengeance was understandable. And Randall Tarly did not disappoint. He's as much of a tool, maybe more, as Sam always said he was. I nearly cheered when Sam burst back into Gilly's room to get her and little Sam out of there, along with Heartsbane. Go, Sam!
I like that too. The only thing I didn't like about it was it seemed a little bit too conventional, you know?
What?
Like in every movie, in most movies, that's what the hero would do. He would burst back in and say, we're getting out of here. And Game of Thrones, I love when it surprises me by doing the unexpected. But on the other hand, I have to let go of that sometimes and just be happy, because I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, although I hope he's
a pretty traditional, like, kind of ordinary guy.
So. Yeah, so it's okay. But I was also looking forward to him being a maester, and it looks like maybe he won't do that now, which is a little disappointing. I hope he figures out a way to do it. Lindsay Borton says, Arya, a girl has a name. A girl also has useful skills. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've ever seen the waif use another face. I don't think so. I don't know for sure, but I don't think so. Will she have to assassinate Arya to gain the use of the faces? Is that why she wanted her to fail? I think she's just sadistic. That look on her face looked more like she just would take joy in killing her. But maybe you're right.
Matthew Carrington says, I think Margaery just figured out how to get Cersei out of the way. Co-sign with the High Sparrow, get Tommen on board, and he sends Jaime out of town with the army just in time for the trial. Cersei has no allies now, just a mountain. I think she's a goner.
That's a good point. I don't know if Margaery orchestrated that, but she is in a bad position, and it does seem, after having just heard that it was pretty dumb of her to just send Jaime away so enthusiastically. Because one thing you notice is Jaime was away while this whole thing was going on with the High Sparrow. And now that he's back, he was a powerful force. He freaking rode his army up and rode his horse right up there and was about ready to fight the way they should have been doing much earlier, and what Joffrey would have done earlier. You know, he wouldn't have let this stuff get so out of control. So Jaime's a powerful guy, and he keeps being sent away, so he can't help.
Well, I mean, we know how successful Cersei is when she has her machinations in King's Landing. I mean, they've never really gone the way she really wants them to.
Yeah, I mean, she early on, to me, felt like a really powerful, dangerous person. And after, third, fourth season, once Joffrey became king, basically, she sort of got neutered a little bit. But early on, you know, she took care of Ned Stark. I don't know if she actually wanted him dead, but, you know, she outsmarted him and everything. Jimmy Leffert says, another great episode. I think Arya's training while blind is going to work to her advantage. Last we saw her, she was sitting in the dark with Needle. I think she knows what's coming and is going to use the dark to her advantage. That would be awesome.
That would make sense. Brianna Cummings, I really just want to jump forward to the scene where Arya gets to stab the shit out of the waif with Needle.
That seems to be a recurring thing. Gio Paris says, my husband, along with plenty other gentlemen expecting Margaery's atonement, are probably disappointed in today's episode. Yeah. Maybe a little.
Nick Quinto? Yes! It's fucking Benjen! How come I get to, like, say the ones that all have, like, bad
I
words?
I didn't do that on purpose. Lara Willie Swink says, I do not think that Jaqen H'ghar wants to have Arya killed. He sent her to play in the town square to test her, but not to test her resolve as a faceless man. I think that he believes she needs to become and embrace Arya Stark again. He was correct, though, but it will be the waifs and not Arya's. I think she means face. Mm-hmm. That, wow, really? I don't know. That's an interesting theory. That would be sort of out of left field because we've never seen him urge or try to train anyone to do anything other than give up their identity. But if that really happens, I'm going to totally remember you wrote it and said that.
Let's see. Emails from Brianna Cummings again. Hi, all. I just want to air a feeling that I have had brewing about Dany, which really came to a head after seeing her speech tonight. I feel like she may be a decoy protagonist. Seeing Bran's green seer flashes of the Mad King, burn them all, and then seeing Dany atop Drogon speaking to her Khalasar, it reminded me that she is the Mad King's daughter, and even though she may have started out with noble intentions, she could just be getting drunk on her power/potential power. There were a couple of moments in that scene where we see Dario's reaction to what is going on, and he doesn't seem to be too jazzed about it. Is he realizing that she is going too far or out of her depth, even though that has been obvious for a while? I do hope I am wrong, but it seems plausible. Aside from that, I did enjoy seeing Drogon's return. And is it just me, or did that dragon get even bigger from the last time we saw it? When he came on the screen, I said, I think Drogon has been eating his Wheaties. Looking forward to the next episode.
I think Dario may have been affected by that, similar to how I was, going, whoa. But I think he really supports her being as powerful as she can be.
I mean, it's only going to be good for him if she gets a lot of power and he's by her side.
And also, he's just a man of action and danger, and he would just want to charge into battle with her, I think, you know?
It's going to be a grand adventure.
Austin Zambrano says... Zambrano says, first off, thank you to everyone involved in this podcast. I recently discovered you all last month and listened intently to every episode. Oh, but that wasn't us. He's probably not. He hasn't listened this far into it. He's like, what's this? I'm going to go listen to another podcast. Anyways, if you're still listening, thank you. Secondly, was I the only one who hated hearing Tommen's voice during his pillar speech? God, he's such a little puppet bitch. But how about Dany's speech? Every time she makes an epic speech, I get goosebumps. Which is pretty cool considering she's speaking a fake language, but you're just hearing the tone and reading the subtitles. Unless you know Dothraki. But that's not actually a real language, I found out.
I think anybody riding a dragon would like have inspire a pretty powerful some. Speech, whatever they're saying.
Oh, yeah? So even if it was Tommen, he rides up, foo, foo, foo. Hello, everyone.
I'd be like,
Whoa.
There's a dragon. Is it going to burn me?
So I've heard a couple theories about Bran, and I was wondering if any of you have heard similar theories and if it would actually make sense. First, we all saw the Mad King yell, burn them all! Earlier, we saw that when Bran yelled out to his father, Ned heard something and turned to look. What if Bran is the reason the Mad King went mad? Bran could have been whispering into his head, trying to convince him to be better, but instead lost his mind. Maybe, but one thing I forgot to mention is one of the other sons drank that fire water because he thought, you know, the fire water or whatever it was, mm-hmm. wildfire, he thought it would turn him into a dragon. So they're just crazy, crazy nutters. That's what I think. But that could be interesting. Another theory, less likely, but what if the old man three-eyed raven is actually Bran from the future when he told Bran, it's time for you to become me? What if he meant literally? I think there's, that's a possibility. This next one I thought was really funny. Go ahead.
From Ashley Renfro. Hi, guys. This is Ashley Renfro. Jason, I met you at Walker Stalker Nashville. I had just finished season one of Game of Thrones when I met you. We talked briefly about Game of Thrones on the meetup at the bar. Well, I just watched season 3, episode 9. And, well, I have no one else to turn to. It's not like the internet is blowing up over this. It happened years ago for everyone else. And I won't have a podcast to listen to until I finish episode 10, so I can listen to your Game of Thrones season 3 recap. So I'm laying on my couch wondering how in the hell could Robb Stark, his beautiful wife, and unborn child, and his mother all be dead. And let's not forget the freaking wolf. They just couldn't let anyone live, could they? And poor Arya. The girl doesn't have a chance. I think I need a Game of Thrones support group after that episode. After some quick Googling to read recaps of the episode from 2013, so it would all seem more real to me, I find out this is the quote, red wedding, end quote, thing I kept hearing about. And I am not happy. How could they? The poor Starks. Ugh. Okay, I could seriously go on for hours, but I will let you continue on with your life after reading this. Maybe I can rest knowing at least one person felt my pain today. Your friend, / if I ever catch up, I may be forever jaded, but I will try, / Game of Thrones fan, no matter what, Ashley Renfro.
That's so funny. It's like talking to someone from 3 years ago through a time machine. I just thought it was funny. She just got to that episode, and I'm really glad that she didn't know it was coming, even though she'd kind of heard of it. It sounds like she forgot, you know, when she got to experience it, even though it's super horrifying. And maybe you're listening to this like 3 months from now when you finally caught up, Ashley, but it's also really impactful. And I know a lot of Game of Thrones fans are actually jealous of you to get to have that experience, as sick and twisted as that sound. Have that pure experience of terrifying, you know, horror and terror. So congratulations. All right, so this is where in the future our book talk section will happen, and Duncan is going to start doing that next week, and I think he'll probably talk about some of the stuff that happened this week too, so you guys can look forward to that next time. But in the meantime, let's talk about that episode. So it's next week on Game of Thrones, and it's going to be Season 6, Episode 7, The Broken Man, written by Brian Cogman and directed by Mark Mylod, who's known for Entourage, among other things. The synopsis says, "The High Sparrow eyes another target. Jaime confronts a hero. Arya makes a plan. The North is reminded." Who do you think Jaime confronts a hero? He's going to River Run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any idea who that might be?
A hero
on the other side. I don't know. I don't know who the players are.
Well, the people converging on River Run right now are Jon Snow, Sansa, Brienne, right?
Because they're
trying to get the Blackfish's support.
Maybe it's Jon Snow.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's also... Who else is going there? Then the water
the
Frey
probably
and
has
Jamie
people,
Lannister.
Yeah.
So yeah, people are, you know, meeting up.
Yeah, maybe it's Jon Snow. Arya makes a plan. Now, I'm glad she has a plan because she needs to do something different than what she has been doing. I think that might refer to her plan for surviving the Faceless Men and getting the hell out of there so she can go back to her old plan, which is killing some people on a list. That's what I think. And then the North is reminded is really interesting because it brings to mind the phrase the North remembers, which they say a lot. And I think it's usually about how Northerners like to get even with people who have wronged them. They remember the wrongs. Mm-hmm. Or also sometimes I feel like it's the North remembers the Starks and they're loyal to the Starks.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about the vengeance
I think,
huh?
The former.
Yeah. So maybe they need a reminder and there's something that's going to happen that will remind them that there's some people like named Bolton that did some things bad to them. I don't know. I saw one little clip for next week, and Tormund of the Wildlings is talking to the Wildlings saying about Jon Snow, "He died for us. If we're not willing to do the same for him, then we're cowards," which made me feel like Jon Snow is a Jesus figure, which I totally should have figured before now, but you know, he's resurrected. So very much looking forward to that episode. All right, that's it. Episode 21. Thanks for listening, everybody. How did we do? How do you think we did?
I think we're a little long, so I hope you'd edit.
No, we're not. It's an hour and 26 minutes. That's not too bad.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Wait, is this going to be in what I respond?
Yeah.
How did we do?
You can tell.
I think we did great. I think our therapist would be so proud of us.
I'm going to leave that whole thing in too. I wanted to mention that our listener, Kim Freemall Sonderman, I know she listens to our Walking Dead podcast. I think she listens to Game of Thrones. I'm not sure. But anyways, she has a podcast called Fear Me, where they cover Fear the Walking Dead in season. But right now they're covering Preacher, which is a new show on AMC that based on the Preacher comic. And I saw the pilot and it was pretty good. We should watch it.
Yeah, we should check it out.
So anyway, check out Fear Me if you want a Preacher podcast by my friend Kim, who's awesome. Also, if you want to call us, we didn't play calls today because I was in Chicago for Walker Stalker and I just didn't have time to go through all the calls and edit them and everything. But I love when you guys call, so please continue to call in and I promise we'll play some calls next week. And if you want to call us, you can reach us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY.
And if you'd like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
And please check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/GOM podcast, or just search for Game of Microphones in Facebook.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
And the not so great ones. No, I'm just kidding. next episode, I'll be hosting with my Fear the Walking Dead cast co-host, Melissa Hutchison, who, if you don't know, is the voice of Clementine in Telltale's Walking Dead games. and we're lucky to have her, and my good friend Duncan, who is somewhat of a Game of Thrones expert and an awesome guy all around. So I'm really looking forward to that. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Burn them all!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.